Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Investing Counterpoint. Today, I think we have an exciting episode for you. I have with me Lincoln Ross from Circle Black. He's the CEO of Circle Black. Hi, Lincoln. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Jan. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Today, you know, Lincoln's product with Circle Black and our product with Rextrema have quite a bit of overlap, I would say, in terms of meeting the needs of the advisor to help their clients reach their objectives. So today, what we're going to talk about is a little bit around the process that advisors go through when they're trying to gain holistic insights into their client's financial situation. So whether it be, you know, their retirement plan, performance, risks, investments, making sure that they're aligned. We're going to talk about all that today. And so to start this off, I thought I'd throw over to you, Lincoln, and ask the question about how typically your clients, A, look at this kind of holistic problem, and B, how you help them answer that.
Sure. As you know, it's really important for advisors to have a complete understanding of a client's financial picture, all of their assets, all of their investments, all of their liabilities. That informs a financial plan, informs a risk assessment as well, and can be a really time-consuming activity to try to do it with statements and PDFs and questionnaires. So what we're trying to do is automate that as much as we can. We have, over the 8 years that the company's been in business, built over a dozen direct interfaces with the traditional custodians, clearing firms, where there you'll see mostly brokerage accounts. But then we've also invested in a couple additional integrations to complement the custody feeds that we have. So one of those is with DST. And DST, I think most of the industry knows DST is, or the data feeds is DST Dazzle and DST Fan Mail, right?
You got to make it exciting somehow, right?
Yeah, they do still go by those brands. But what they are is a way for advisors to send us data and accounts that are not in a brokerage account. And so there's a wide spectrum of those. There's still a significant amount of direct mutual fund business that is either legacy or continues to be in effect. And new accounts continue to be open that way. And that's a way that advisors prefer to do business, which is great. But beyond traditional mutual funds, DST, you can get access to variable annuities, you can get access to insurance products, you can get access to 529 plans is another one that we see as a popular asset class that we support through DST. So that, and the variety and the diversity of record keepers and asset management products that are available on DST makes it for a fairly complicated data feed to process.
I'm sure it does.
We've invested a lot in trying to get that data as clean as possible, as timely as possible for advisors. So we think that's a really important dimension of a holistic round complement to brokerage custody feeds. And then the second one is Yodlee. And so Yodlee.
Yodlee. I thought you said yogurt. Yodlee. Yes, I know.
That's not an asset class yet, I don't think. Maybe Chobani's been doing well as
yeah. For Mr. Chobani, it's an asset class for sure.
So Yodlee is able to round out pretty much any traditional asset that an investor has. So as you know, Yodlee has over 17,000 financial institutions that it connects with. There, what we see is two things. One is we can round out the asset side of the balance sheet with checking accounts and savings accounts is really where Yodlee shines in accessing some of the banking accounts that aren't necessarily accessible through any other source. But then also you can bring in the liability side of the balance sheet through Yodlee. You can get a credit card accounts into a financial plan through Yodlee, as well as mortgages and loans. We think that with the investment in that technology and making it available for advisors to, in a lot of cases, they can make that the Yodlee experience is delivered through our client portal. So clients will go in and enter their credentials, and then we can start a feed of those accounts that they've linked that are held away. So that advisor has that holistic view.
So what's interesting about it is, so that's the first part of the problem really is the data. And that's, there's no sugarcoating how complicated that can be, especially at scale, and especially the more complicated somebody's personal situation is. I mean, that can be a real big problem. But then you have the advisor problem of actually being able to view that information in a way that they can make good sense of it kind of consistently and through their client base, and how they can see that where there might be not necessarily issues, but where they might need attention and what their different clients have. So that's the issue of getting in is huge, but then there's also the issue of managing it on a daily basis. How do you guys look at that?
Yeah, so great point. And it's also not easy to make that work well every day. Yeah. What we've built is a architecture that gives the advisor the ability to construct kind of a household hierarchy within the Circle Black system. So at the base level is an account. Accounts are then grouped by clients. And then clients are grouped by household. And that, so clients are essentially a person. And so as you know, a person can have multiple accounts, and then there can be multiple clients within a household. So that's one level of hierarchy. So advisors can see the entire household. That household view can be also be made available to clients through the client portal. But that doesn't always solve all the different slices and ways that advisors want to look at a client's financial picture. Let me unpack that a bit and back up a bit. The system will calculate performance at each of those levels as well. And so we have a time-weighted and a dollar-weighted rate of return calculation that can be applied at the account, client, or household level.
And are you guys collecting that information as you go? So you're actually building that and calculating it, or are you getting those numbers from, you know, wherever you're receiving the information from?
We build it and we calculate it.
Wow.
So we build the history. And so we have a daily position for every security for every account that's in the system. Wow. And so that with that, we can then roll them up. We call them containers, not to get too technical on our architecture, but each level of that hierarchy is a container, and each container has a calculated rate of return associated with it for every day.
So when an advisor sees that container, essentially there's, you know, based on your platform, there's other things they can do with that container. So there's, you know, so getting the container, seeing it, and getting your views as an advisor, but then also being able to go and, you know, from our perspective, what we do is, as you know, risk analysis. So we could take one of those containers and look at the risk of that container relative to something, but you can do quite a bit more within your platform about with that container.
That's right. So within those containers, each of them, we can report asset allocation breakout by that account, client, or household. We're in the process of rolling out an asset class performance capability. So there's like containers within containers. So we have the ability to show rate of return by holding, by account, and then by asset class, and then grouping those asset classes and can break those out by household.
That's really neat.
Yeah, and one of the, like I was saying, that is our default hierarchy, and that sounds pretty flexible, but that still doesn't always accomplish all the use cases. And so we do have an account grouping container where an advisor can pick specific accounts that they want to have in a group that may not necessarily fall into the account, client, household hierarchy. So if you want to show all of the a client's retirement accounts together and how they're performing, that would be a particular use case that you would use the grouping category for.
We also can do that across the clients in the household. So you could see like all of their retirement accounts for the husband and wife, or all the 529s for their seven kids or whatever they might have.
Exactly. And just see how those are. Right. And then we have another use case where if for some reason we can't get access to a data feed, advisors can add an asset manually and update that. So maybe there's an insurance policy that's not available. Some advisors like to put the house, the primary residence in the system as an asset and track that as part of the overall balance sheet and net worth, which makes a lot of sense. And so that brings into play another feature that we've developed over time, which is the ability to exclude something surgically from the house, from the household or from the performance calculation. You may not want the primary residence to be included in a time-weighted rate of return. That may not make sense.
Been
manually added. So that's also a flexibility that we've gotten a lot of great feedback on.
Interesting. So some of the things like the different variable annuities too, which I know that you can track, those have different terms and conditions, generally speaking. So you're probably not going to be able to get all of those from a single source. So the advisor can go in and, you know, enter the rider information and all that kind of stuff. And then it will probably track. I mean, I guess then your calculation engine can go ahead and say, okay, well, if this has a cap and a floor based on the S&P 500, you can do things like that, right? Yeah, structured products or the like.
Yeah, there are some limitations to that, but there are ways to model that out in the system so that you can get close to an ability to show how those work and how they're performing within the overall asset household.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about those, because we do those too, and you know, there's a very, very important time component. I mean, you guys do it daily, but you know, there's like when it breaches the cap or when it breaches the floor and then when it comes back. And so if you're doing a scenario for us and we're looking over a year's time, it kind of matters what, you know, what the path is can often matter, especially if you have like these monthly, you know, 5% caps on the upside, but you're going to do a year where you're going to say that the S&P is up 20%. Well, how many times did it break the 5% to get there? So there's a lot of different variables in there with those. Yeah. So they can add a whole different layer.
Yeah. And to be fair, there are limitations to what we can do there. And that's where our integration strategy comes in. And so for this particular example, we see a lot of value in the ability to collect, to transition or to feed the data that we've collected into a software tool that may be more sophisticated than ours to do something like you just said. A product like yours would be a opportunity for us to collect that data and then bring it into a more sophisticated risk analysis software that would do some of the things you just described. We also see that use case in financial planning as well. Understanding the products and the investments and having the ability to automatically collect that and then on a daily basis update that into a risk tool or into a financial planning tool keeps that financial plan or that risk assessment alive, so to speak. You know, it's not put on a shelf collecting dust. It's a living, breathing financial plan or risk analysis. And as we've seen over the weekend, it's really important to have current data flowing into those various software tools so that advisors have the most information to make the best advice to their clients.
Absolutely. And from a risk provider like that, I have nothing but appreciation for what you guys are able to do in terms of aggregating that data, because that is, like I said in the beginning, that is just such a heavy lift. And I think that and it's not the sexiest lift. I mean, despite the name like Dazzle and all those other kinds of things that they're putting into the data feeds, it's super critical. And it doesn't matter what, you know, if it's a family, if it's a portfolio, if it's like whatever the assets that you're collecting are, that old adage of garbage in, garbage out. If you don't have good data coming into it, you're not going to be able to do that. So that's really interesting. So have you also built tools so you mentioned like, and I know that you guys have partnerships all over the place, and some of the things that are just don't make sense, like some of the financial planning tools and risk tools, and probably some of the other tools just don't make sense to spend all the time to build because of how much expertise is there and how much expertise you guys have to have just to do your own job. But what else do you guys have on your platform that somebody can look at that, you know, we were talking about the holistic look into the view. So, you know, you're talking about how you can take out different things. Like what does that look like when you pull something out? Like what kind of analysis can be done within your platform?
Yeah. So there's additional views into the country exposure, for example, is another way that accounts and assets can be sliced. So that's one in terms of the international. And then we talked about assets. asset classes as well. That's one of the slices that we do. We also do, if they are at a book level, advisors using multiple clearing firms, there's a way to see where their exposure is. It's called an institutional exposure, to see where their accounts are and if they have any, what their mix is with their various partners is another way to slice it.
Yeah. Now, you don't have, and I don't think this is something, because I've never seen anybody that has this, but you know, if you had like, you know, so as we're talking today on the 13th of March, 2023, the big Silicon Valley Bank, you know, blow up just happened. There's a lot of pressure on these smaller financial banks. But if you had like a bunch of different mutual funds, you don't have the ability to look through those mutual funds, right? Because, you know, when you're saying about bringing in country exposures and different things like that, as a risk guy, what I think about, and you talk about exposures to institutions, I think about, well, okay, if I could bring in all of the different holdings that I had that were related to Silicon Valley Bank, that would be really, but it's a almost impossible process to do.
Yeah, we don't have what I have called in the past that X-ray, and I don't know if that's been trademarked by anyone, but that ability to look through what a mutual fund holdings are. And you know some of the constraints there. There's a lag in the mutual fund reporting of what they have, and I think there's been some firms that have attempted some correlation analysis to see if they could figure out what's in that mutual fund bucket more real time. But I haven't seen a solution that can do that without the lag of what the mutual funds reported at their last reporting time.
That's absolutely true. And I think that, you know, to do that is a, you know, what you're doing is a heavy lift. I think to do that is an extremely almost impossible lift, just because you need transparency. And most people don't even want to give you that transparency, quite frankly. So even if you had the ability and desire to do it, most people aren't going to want to give that to you anyways. That's really interesting. So, you know, you mentioned this client portal a lot, and I'm kind of interested in it because we do not have our advisors like you, our clients like yours are the advisors, but the, you know, the advisors' clients, you're giving them tools to actually go in and see and manage. And like through Yodlee, you're giving them ways to put in information in. That's an really, you know, even though they're not directly your clients, that's got to be really part of that client experience for you, because, you know, ultimately the advisors are going to stick with you or not stick with you if their clients are happy or unhappy.
Yeah, that's a huge part of our value proposition, is bring all that data together, having it clean, reconciled, having those performance calculations at those different levels, but then delivering that in an elegant, simple way to the end client is something that advisors really value in the Circle Black product.
I can imagine.
It's a different user to be thinking about when building that software. An advisor obviously is going to have a much higher level of understanding and sophistication with the software and have different expectations than the client. And I think a lot of times financial services software delivers too much sophistication and complexity to the end client, and they get overwhelmed. And so what we try to do is a couple things. One is give the advisor some flexibility around what is delivered in the client portal. So advisors can choose the rate of return type of calculation. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we have dollar weighted versus time weighted. They can choose which one gets used. And we're in the process of building out additional functionality for advisors to entitle certain levels of sophistication and functionality. Additionally, advisors have a certain way that they like to communicate the investments that they've made and how the investments are performing, and they have a way that they like to look at it. And so we're in the process of building out a default client view that's configurable by the advisor. So the advisor can go in and say, here's how I want the client portal to look. I want asset allocation up on the left. I want a mountain chart of performance on the right. I want transactions on the left and holdings in the bottom right. That's how I look at it. That's how I talk about it. And that's how I want my client to see it when they come in. And we can either lock that down. The other requirement we understand is sometimes they want to offer that as a default, but then if a client is really particular about the way they want to see it, they want to be able to rearrange those tiles the way that they want. And so we've built in some configurability for the end client to configure how they want to see the client portal. So it's about It's about having different levels of complexity, different levels of sophistication, so that advisors can manage how much or how little they want to make available in that client portal.
That's really, yeah, that's pretty neat. And really important, I got to say, because, you know, not everyone wants to look at this. I think about trying, you know, if I was an advisor trying to get someone like my grandmother to put her, you know, assets in, and you, cause you talk about the ease of use and like different levels of sophistication. It's one thing if you're an advisor, and I actually feel for advisors too, because they have their tech stacks are ever expanding. And right. So them trying to learn all these different systems. So you're trying to make it so it's intuitive as possible for the advisor, but at least the advisor is going to do it over their, you know, 10 to 100 to 1,000 clients, whatever they might have, depending on the size. But this end user, like my grandmother, is doing it one time, you know, maybe there'll be another asset. Yeah. So you can afford to have the advisor maybe not be intuitively able to do everything, because once they learn it, they can apply it, you know, 10 or 100 times. But this other client, my grandmother, can only afford to be using it once. So it has to be really self-explanatory at the time.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. And there's one other dimension of the client experience that I'm really studying and trying to understand is the mobile expectation of end client. And we're seeing some pull on our mobile app. We have a mobile app. We have the ability for advisors to white label it in the app stores. Oh, so cool. They can have their brand in the app store. It does say powered by Circle Black in the description, but it's searchable by their firm name, and the logo will show up in the icon of the app, and clients can download and install it. It is cool, and it's not getting as much pull as I would expect. And I think part of why I think that is there was a study, I'm going to miss the numbers, but I'm going to get them pretty close, which is when asked how investors want to view their investment account, those under 35 said, and they were given a web app versus mobile app versus a couple other things, like over 70% of respondents under 35 wanted to see them on a mobile app. The same question asked to those over 55, it was something like under 30% chose mobile app.
Right.
And so if you think about where the wealth is and where the current concentration of clients and decision makers that advisors are serving, it's probably skewed towards that the over 40 and 55, right? And 50 generation. But as that wealth transfers, and I'm sure you've seen we've all seen the huge numbers that are predicted to transfer generationally over the next couple decades. I think it's an opportunity to get ahead of what's not being requested by the client that's 50, but is going to be absolutely expected by their children. And that's a way to, I think, develop that relationship with that next generation and be seen as progressively using technology and a way to retain that relationship. So it's just something we're really focused on trying to understand the dynamics in the market and how to help advisors be responsive to this expectation for technology. We can do so many things on our phone. Why can't we look up our investment accounts? And so, but there isn't always the correlation to the actual activity that happens in the marketplace. And so we're just trying to study that.
I'm really interested in how that progresses too, because, you know, I've seen those same exact stats that you're talking about where, you know, everybody under, you know, a certain age wants everything mobile and on their phones. And then everyone that gets older wants it on there. And part of that is the, you know, evolution of smartphones from when, you know, these kids were, you know, or adults were a lot, you know, when they were kids, growing up with that. But I'm also wondering, like my own experience, I used to be able to work on a laptop, right? So a small screen, and now I have two screens here and I have a hard time working on that laptop. So I'm wondering, as people get older and they start to just, you know, their eyes start to go and they need these glasses and they start to, like, the phone is for me, and I'm not even in the 55 yet, but it just gets hard to, you know, to see really important financial information through that, no matter how good of a UI you have. And so I'm really interesting to see that development and that, if it keeps up with those stats of the younger generation, you know, as they grow older, keep on using the phone, and maybe it will.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to deliver a sophisticated set of information and data and decisions through whatever it is,
exactly.
You know, a 2.5 by 7 inch experience. But I don't think that should be an excuse, because there's a lot of complicated things that we can do. It's just taking a big investment. Like I think booking an airline reservation, there's a lot of moving parts and changing a seat, changing a reservation. It's just one example of how I think an industry is really invested in making that experience work on a phone, and it does. I use it all the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're 100% right. And even banking, I mean, you know, going to something which is more money centric, I mean, banking, you'll most people have their bank apps on their phones, and they'll look at their balances and they'll transfer money. There are things that are simple transactionally, you know, and maybe there'll be a way to do it from a overall, you know, analysis view. And that'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, one of the areas that we have a hypothesis that we can really deliver a differentiated experience for advisors is just simply using the app as a communication mechanism. If an advisor has, you know, think about this weekend and Friday, how useful would it be for an advisor to be able to say, depending on what their situation is, whatever their situation is with Silicon Valley Bank, whether it was in the portfolios or not in the portfolios, or I'm watching it and understand that the risks in this, please call me, to be able to enter a message, have that then pop up on a notification, on an app, on the client's phone, in a compliant way, because as you know, there are a lot of compliance constraints in our space where any communication needs to be recorded. We can do that easily through the application. And so I think that's just one use case. We think there's a lot more we can do to help advisors have higher quality communication with their clients.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about our document vault, but that's another area where we think that there's a huge opportunity to centralize all of the documentation and history and records that a client and an advisor should be able to collaborate on in the digital age, which still seem somewhat archaic, where there's still a lot of paper that happens in our space.
Do you guys do anything with Reg BI and things like that? Is that part of the compliance that you guys deal with?
So we do not have anything explicitly solving for that, but I have been thinking about if that should be part of our roadmap and some of the recent. I was just having a conversation last week about the Labor Department's requirement around rollovers and best interest with a rollover out of 401k. And so I think there's probably more we can do there and potentially, just starting with sending some of the documentation to the document vault so that it's available
for
both client and advisor to have, and for an easy access for regulators when they come in to see the books and records.
And that's exactly what made me think of it, just because, I mean, we do have a Reg BI tool, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you need to remember exactly what you did, what you recommended, how you recommended it, what all the points are, and then you need to process it and have it somewhere where you can access it very easily. But also, so it's actually a pretty simple thing to comply with, I think, in my opinion, there's a lot of work, like you're talking about, all this documentation, all this document, management is really a scary thing.
You can do all that, but if you're not able to show that you sent it to the client, then it's as if you never did it. And so being able to systematize that and have that recorded as it, we can have an audit trail that the document went to the document vault, the system sent an email to the client with the link to the document vault. If the client logged in and viewed that, we have the audit trail of that too. So there's some books and records value that we could probably be adding to the product.
Very valuable. Excellent. Well, we've been talking for quite some time, Lincoln, and I appreciate it. I could probably talk to you for another hour or so because, we have not necessarily overlap, but our clients are the same clients, and we can probably geek out on this stuff for quite a long time. But I really appreciate you coming on and spending a half hour with me today. It's been really interesting.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun. Call me back anytime.
Great. Thank you.